liberated from every misery, liberated from misery of existence in Europe. We thank you very much, America. We will never forget this moment. We are born today, the second time in our life. It's a great miracle of the second birth for the new life of freedom, for the new life of democracy. Thank you very much.
That is the voice of a DP, a displaced person. He's speaking to you on the occasion of his landing in America last month. Now listen to the story of the DP, the delayed pilgrim. During the next few minutes, we will tell you the transcribed story of one displaced person and his family, and report to you what we Americans did and what we did not, what our Congress has done and what it has not done to enable us to help these dispossessed of the world. And in addition, we will bring you actual interviews and statements made by some who were among the first DPs to arrive in America just a few short weeks ago. Listen now to The Arrival of Delayed Pilgrims. But now here is your narrator, Ben Grauer.
I'll ask you to pretend with me that today is December 22nd, anniversary of the arrival in America of the first displaced persons. They were displaced from England and the Netherlands because of their religious convictions. And they landed at a place called Plymouth on December 22nd, 1620. These were the pilgrims who agreed among each other in a solemn compact.
We do covenant to enact just and equal laws for the general good.
Just and equal laws for the general good. Keep that phrase in mind. It'll come in handy. Today we're concerned with another band of pilgrims, delayed pilgrims. Delayed in their arrival by red tape, by heartlessness, by thoughtlessness, selfishness, and misplaced pride. By all the things and all the men who would keep America from its proud tradition of sanctuary for the oppressed and weary and downtrodden. We're going to tell you the story of these delayed pilgrims, but first we want you to meet some of them and hear what they had to say on the day of their arrival in America. We took a microphone and recording equipment down to the boat on the day the first DPs landed so that you'd be able to hear their voices. Here, for instance, is Catherine Silmanowitz, a Czech girl.
Now we'd like to talk to this young lady standing here. Will you give us your name, please?
Yes, my name is Catherine Zelmanovic.
Catherine Zelmanovic.
Yes.
What nationality are you, Catherine?
I'm Czechoslovakian.
Yes. And were you in a concentration camp?
I was in Auschwitz and in Plaszow in Poland. And later I was in Germany near to Leipzig, in a camp where I was working in a factory for airplanes. I was forced to work.
Yes, we've heard a lot about Auschwitz and some of the other camps, too. I know it's distasteful to you to recall them, but would you mind giving us some of your experiences, telling us something about the conditions in the concentration camps where you were?
Sure. What would like to know? I was in Auschwitz, Tuchman, in 44. Because this part where I live in Czechoslovakia was occupied from Hungarians, so I could be there to 44. And then I was taken there with my parents. And I have lost my parents in this very day when I arrived to Auschwitz.
On the very day?
On the very day. They were taken in crematorium. They were burned there.
I see.
Only I was alive there, but then I didn't know that my brother is alive. I am very thankful that he is alive.
You found him where?
I found him in Germany. I hear that he's alive. He's coming too with the next shipment. He's already in Bremen.
Will that be a wonderful reunion, though?
Yes, because a little family which has stayed from a big family.
Yes. I suppose you have thought perhaps for some time that you might be able to come to the United States?
I always hoped so.
Yes.
And I always wanted so. This was my only wish. To come to the United States, to a free land, to a free country, where it's everybody the same. And there are no difference with the people. Everybody is a human body. This is what I wished. I think that I won.
Let me introduce another of our new arrivals. He's a middle-aged man from Poland. He was more than a little nervous and shy when he was first asked his name. Perhaps you won't be able to hear him, so I'll tell you in advance that his name is Milja.
Where are you going in this country? In America. Where are you going now?
I go
New York?
Chicago.
To Chicago?
Yes.
I see. Do you have a family
a
there?
A cousin. Yes.
And do you plan to work there?
Yes.
At what? Do you have a trade or a profession that you do?
I think to work here and to be a free man in a free country.
The main thing is to be a free man in a free country. Okay. I see.
Yes.
Well,
and this is here in America.
There's one more of our new neighbors whom I'd like you to meet. Her manner is perhaps a trifle more assured. She's younger. There's more room for confidence in her heart. She has more time to make up for what has happened, and she, too, has experienced much. She begins by telling you her name.
My name is Eva Ackerman.
And what country do you come from?
Hungary.
From Hungary.
Yes.
And could you tell me, were you in a concentration camp
during
the war?
Yes, I was. I was in Landsberg.
In Landsberg?
For 1 year.
1 year?
Yeah.
I see. And were other members of your family along with you?
No, I was just alone.
You were alone. Why were you put in the concentration camp?
Because I'm a Jew.
I see. And what did you do while you were in there? Were you forced to work?
Yes, I had a very stupid work. Take errands from one place to the other. That was all.
I see. And how did you manage to get out of the concentration camp?
Maybe I have a strong nature.
You managed to survive where some others didn't. Is that the idea? Where have you been since you left the camp?
Frankfurt.
In Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Working there.
Yeah.
Is your family there?
No, I lost my family.
You lost.
Yeah.
You lost all
of
your family.
Met, yeah, everybody.
In the concentration camps or.
Yes, my mother was in Bergen-Belsen, and my father died from a bomb in Hungary.
He was killed by a bomb.
Yeah.
I see. Where are you going now in this country?
In New York.
You're going to New York
yeah.
to live there. Do you have relatives?
No, just good friends.
I see. And do you plan to work?
I'm a dressmaker.
You are a dressmaker.
Yeah.
I see. And you hope to get employment there as a dressmaker.
Sure.
I see. Well, I'm sure that you will. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
These are the voices of three of our new neighbors. And they've given you, each of them, a pitifully small handful of facts about themselves. The conditions they've met in Europe were, in Milja's classic understatement, very bad. They have survived perhaps because, as Miss Eckerman suggested, they have strong natures. And they're happy to be here because, as Catherine put it, in America, everybody is a human body. These were three DPs, then. And it might be wise to go now from the specific to the general and get some facts about the DPs as a group. What would your questions be? Well, first, you might ask,
just exactly what is a DP?
Well, broadly speaking, a DP is a displaced person. That is, a person whose roots were torn up by the war, who's been left without a home to which he can return, without a country where he can or wants to find a home.
How many of these people are there?
More than a million. Perhaps 150,000 can and will be repatriated, but at least 850,000 cannot.
Who are they?
Balts, Czechs, Poles, Romanians, Yugoslavs, Hungarians, Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Greek Orthodox, men, women, children.
Who is responsible for them?
We are. Humanity is. More specifically, the United Nations has assumed responsibility for them.
On that basis, how great would have been the responsibility of the United States?
On the basis of our financial contributions to UNRWA, we'd have given sanctuary to 784,000. On the basis of our population as compared with that of other countries, no less than 400,000.
How many are we, in fact, inviting to come and live with us?
200,000, as the law now stands.
That's a big difference. How come?
How come? because of what happened late last spring in the Senate of the United States. And that, as much as anything, is why we want to tell the story of one DP. A typical story, if a story of terror and misery can ever be typical. We'll give him a fictional name. It might be Svoboda, which is quite an ordinary name among Slavic peoples, and is closely related to liberty in the Slavic tongues, but we have no wish to be ironic. We'll call this man Lin, which is also an ordinary name, an ambiguous name, which can be used to describe Pole, Jew, Balt, Czech, Protestant, Catholic, any land, any religion. The same sort of ambiguity which should be, but is not, the test applied to who shall be offered sanctuary and a new life in America. Call him Lin. Here he sits. The time is early last June at a table in an office of Mariendorf Displaced Persons Camp, facing an investigator, a man inquiring on behalf of the United Nations into the facts of Lin's case. Lin is a big man. He dwarfs the investigator across from him.
I understand you wish to go to America.
That's right.
Then you won't mind if I ask a few questions?
Please.
You come from...
Poland. We lived in Vilna.
We?
My wife and I and our girl, Olga. She's 12 now.
And the rest of your family?
Father, mother, sister, brother. Gestapo in 1941.
Oh. How was it they didn't...
I'm a big man. They thought I would be useful.
Wasn't it about that time the Nazis ordered a special killing of the children?
1942. That was in Vilna. And that in February, we heard about it, my wife and I. I remember. We knew we had to do something. Where is she now?
Olga. In bed, of course. Asleep.
Oh, of course. I ask questions. I know the answers. I know I shall do something. I just sit.
Our Olga. I will say a terrible thing. Maybe it's better she was dead.
Anna. Wake her up, Anna. Wake her up and get her dressed.
Where can we go? It would catch us in an hour.
We are going nowhere. We are staying here. And Olga, we will hide her. They will never find her. Wake her up. Get her dressed. Make her wear my old gray sweater. Dress her very warmly. Very warmly.
Tell me what
you want. You and I, no one else is to know.
But what
right
are you...
here, see, just here, under the window, I'll dig a hole. We'll hide her down there and close the floorboards over her head. All day she will stay there. A hole just big enough
for... She'll freeze.
She'll be cold. Give her my sweater. But she will be alive. Wake her up.
I'll go. Olga, you must not cry. You must keep quiet. Love me, be still now. Coming? Yes?
Frau Lind?
I am Frau Lind.
Our records show there's a child here. A girl. 5 years old. Where is she?
A girl? Well, you mean Olga. But she died. It is 7 months since.
Liar! Pig! Search the rooms. Find her.
Yes, sir. All right, come on.
And then?
They went away.
Oh, thank God.
I never even saw where I had spilled the dirt back a minute before.
My Olga.
I was quiet as a mouse.
Now, you see. Well, you must always be quiet and try to sleep.
Yes, sir.
Hard for her, especially at first, only 5 years old. It was hard for her to understand.
How long did she have to stay in the hole?
All day. She only came out at night to stretch and to play with us.
No, Mr. Lind. I mean, how many days did she have to hide in the hole?
Oh, how long? 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
On this same June day, while Lynn sits talking to the U.N. investigator, in Washington, in the Capitol, the Senate of the United States is debating the Displaced Persons Bill of 1948 called the Wiley-Rebicombe Bill.
Meeting, call to order.
There was a majority in the Senate of the United States in favor of a decent, good bill, a bill worthy of our traditions. But it was late in June, shortly before Congress adjourned. A handful of men was thus able to slide this act through and block all attempts to improve it at the time. Many senators, Democrats as well as Republicans, fought valiantly to uphold America's tradition, our heritage, America's responsibility to freedom. Listen to a plea of Senator H. Alexander Smith of New Jersey as he spoke in June 1948, and we quote,
"The bill is in the interest of the United States and definitely gives voice to the conscience of the people of the United States. We must not forget that this problem is one which grows out of our victory in the war. The bill proposes to determine the eligibility of a displaced person by the test of whether or not he came into Germany between September 1st, 1939 and December 22nd, 1945. This presents a problem of difficulty which, in my judgment, should be carefully considered. About 200,000 persecuted people fled into our western zones after the Kielce pogrom in Poland in the spring of 1946. In light of the problem presented by this group of people who came into the American zones between 1945 and 1947, it would seem appropriate to make a change of the deadline as of April 21st, 1947.
How important is a date? In the Marienburg camp, the U.N. official was asking Lind some further questions.
Mr. Lind, I'm interested in dates, if you don't mind.
Dates?
Yes. For instance, do you remember when it was that you left Vilna?
When I left Vilna? Oh, yes, I remember. It was in 1944.
1944? But that was before the end of the war.
Yes, by 1944, there were only a handful of us left in Vilna. It's only a short time ago, 4 years, but already it's beginning to be difficult to believe that we suffered so much.
You were saying that you left Vilna in 1944.
Yes. I remember how it happened. In 1944, the Nazis announced that they would kill all of us who were left. We were ordered to come forward for killing or cremation.
What are we to do?
What else?
We must fight. How can we?
I had to take over, become leader. Only I had a plan. How many of us are there?
2,000 anyway.
Nearly 30. Yes, there will be room.
Where?
To do what? To come to my house and wriggle up between the ceiling of the top floor and the roof. There is not too much air space up there, and we will not be able to live there long. But if God is with us,
it is worth a chance.
It won't work. Oh, you are coming with us, Eilig. I won't have a man like you, a defeatist, outside, maybe telling others where we are. I'll see to it. Come on, everybody, follow me. They followed me. We were 30. Between the ceiling and the roof of the building I lived in, we lay for 2 days. And terrible thoughts went through our brains.
They'll put the torch to the whole section.
Yes. A few mortar shots. It would not take many.
I can't stand it. I'm going out. See where the others are.
Their screams last night.
I heard. And the old man lives in the corner. They were going to use gas.
Cheaper than bullets.
Shut up! Shut up, all of you!
We could pray.
Two days. Just when it seemed quite mad to want to go on living. The others, the villagers, poured into our section to loot the homes of those they thought dead. We heard them. Quietly, we climbed down one by one to join the peasants, looting our homes to mix with them one by one innocently and slip unnoticed out of the street. You asked me when it was I left Vilna. It was the late fall of 1944.
The dates are important. Now, you came to a camp then in 1944.
I went back to Vilna then. The Red Army had driven the Nazis out.
Yes.
And my old home, the one I had before the war, it was gone. Nothing left.
Oh.
The government announced that if I had been a Polish subject before 1939, I could get back to Poland. So I took my family to lodge in Poland.
But the dates are important. When was it you first came to a DP camp?
To a DP camp? Let me see.
Yes, the dates are important. For even while Lynn sits answering the questions addressed to him by a UN official, in Washington, the United States senators are still discussing this question of dates. Some of them realize that this question of dates is all important to hundreds of thousands of DPs. Others, if they realize it, give no sign. For in the official committee version of the bill, in the version sponsored by Senator Revacombe, it is stated that he is not a displaced person who was registered in a DP camp later than December 22nd, 1945.
Do you remember when it was you came to the DP camp, Mr. Lynn? If you don't, I imagine we can check it against the records.
Well, I remember Anna and I. We tried to make a home in the lodge. We hoped that at last all would be peaceful.
Now, was it before December 22nd, 1945 that you came to the DP camp?
Before. Oh, no, I don't think so. You see, the reason we fled from lodge, the reason we came to the camp, the reason we want to go to America is that in 1946 there were riots in Poland. Terror.
Oh, so it was not until after 1946 that you came to a DP camp. Hmm?
But there was no reason to come until after the terror began.
But the Revacombe Bill stipulates that only those who were registered before December 22, 1945 can be regarded as DPs. So eliminated are all who, after that date, fled the anti-Semitic pogroms in Poland, the terror of communism in Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, and Romania.
Have you any agricultural training, Mr. Lind?
No. I was a truck driver.
I see. And do you now have a chance to get a job in America?
Oh, I think so. I'm a good worker.
Oh, no, you don't understand what I mean. Have you a job assured you now when you get to America?
How would that be possible? It would be possible to have such an assurance.
Well, it's difficult. But you have no job promised?
No.
Tell me, do you know where you're going to live if you go to America?
You mean it? In what house? At what address?
That's right.
Oh, I thought I would look for a house, find a home for my wife and daughter.
But you have no house, no home or apartment guaranteed you as of this moment.
No. Is it necessary?
I'll see what I can do about your application for America, Mr. Lind.
You think maybe I will be able to?
I'll see what I can do.
As Lynn gets up to go, a big, heavily built man, a man with a worker's strong hands, in Washington, across the sea, Senator Claude Pepper is likewise getting up. He's rising to make the last speech before the Senate votes on the Wiley-Revacombe version of the Displaced Persons Act of 1948. And Senator Pepper is not wildly enthusiastic. We quote,
"Mr. President, I cannot refrain from making a few observations with regard to the appalling inadequacies of the bill. The Baltic states get half of all the quotas that are to be accommodated, the Balts having 171,000 and the Jews having 128,100. Yet, Mr. President, who among the displaced persons have been so persecuted, so cruelly massacred and butchered as have been the Jewish people? The bill further provides that 50% of the people who get visas must have had agricultural background, experience, and training. There again, criteria have been laid down which, if not by design, at least by effect, discriminates against the most persecuted of all the displaced people. Is this bill designed to help supply needed help to agriculture? Or is the bill aimed to provide sanctuary for a persecuted, a miserable, a wretched, a homeless people? I wonder what sort of a country we would have today if only the well-to-do, if only those had been admitted who had some financial sponsor or responsible character here to receive them. Has it become impossible for a poor man or a poor woman to come to this land of the free?
Mr. President, will the senator from Florida yield?
I yield to the senator from New Mexico.
We are now quoting from Senator Chavez's speech.
Along the lines suggested by the senator from Florida, where would Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit, New York, Philadelphia, and all the other industrial cities of the nation be if there had always been such a regulation in the immigration laws?
America would not have been the America we have today if it had not been for the immigrants who poured across our borders and took upon their strong shoulders the work of building America. And thank God we did not ask whether they had any rich relatives in America when they came, nor that they will have safe and sanitary housing available to them without displacing some other person from such housing as required by this bill.
The bill passed with all the restrictions which many valiant senators had so bitterly criticized. It means that, with great good luck, maybe 200,000 displaced persons will, in the next 2 years, be able to find sanctuary here in America. We remember the words of one of the early arrivals. Her name is Helen Randon, an Estonian, who came on the first DP transport and lives now in Raleigh, North Carolina. She's talking about the American people.
I even hope that they will then extend their generosity even to those who still are there in Germany and are hoping to get out of there as soon as possible, because it's only too clear that a displaced person's life in Germany never will be anything a human being could expect for his future well-being.
The 81st Congress, the new Congress which convened in January, has high on its agenda the question of rewriting the Displaced Persons Act in such a way as to permit a law which should have been passed in the first place, a law which testifies that America's high purposes and generous heart still govern, a law like those the first pilgrims agreed to enact.
Just and equal laws for the general good.
Men like Lind are waiting.
You have just heard The Arrival of Delayed Pilgrims, a transcribed documentary radio drama by Peter Lyon, produced by Ted Hudis and directed by Frank Papp. Original music composed and directed by John Gott. The narrator was Ben Grauer. The cast included E.A. Crumschmidt, Roger DeCoven, John McGovern, Bryna Rayburn, Joan Lazer, Leon Janney, Arnold Robertson, Santos Ortega, Alan Williams, and Ron Cochran. The producer of this program wishes to express his appreciation to radio stations WMCA New York and WCOP Boston for the use of their recording facilities. Bill Lazar speaking.